Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor, whose first professional job was next to none other than John Schneider from the Dukes of Hazzard in the singing and dancing group, the Trunk Stop Players, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite Eternal Ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/ the Delta Flyers.
Oh my God. You went deep.
That's as deep as you can get. How many, let me start interviewing you. How many Trunk Stop Players were there total?
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
So the Trunk Stop Players was a little talent show group. It was five of us.
Okay.
There was five of us, and it was started by Carolyn Fleetwood, who owned the dance studio where I was introduced to all of this craziness. Fleetwood Studios in Atlanta, Georgia. Carolyn decided with some of her young talent that she would put together this little cabaret talent show group. And we would go around to like corporate events and things like that and do our little shows. And you and I were talking about this right before the podcast.
Yes.
So yeah, John Schneider from the Dukes of Hazzard was in the Trunk Stop Players.
Look at the ratio there. Two of the five, almost 50% of the group went on to become a television star.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
That's nuts.
Yeah, that actually is crazy. I mean, I never in my wildest dreams when I was 14 or 15, however old I was, 13 or 14 maybe.
Yes.
Doing these little tap dancing shows for company lunches that...
lunch? So you guys went down to Coca-Cola, like you mean corporate companies?
Yeah,
we'd go to like... I interrupted you. You said that might have been the pinnacle. You're about to say something about
that. I thought that I was getting... I got paid. I think I got paid like maybe $50 a performance.
And, which is a lot back then. That's
back
a lot of money.
Then I was like, are you kidding me? I'm getting paid to do this? I thought that might be the one and only time I ever got paid in my life to do this. So you and I were talking about it.
Yes.
And I had this moment where I'm like, hold on. So I ran over and I found this. Okay. Now.
Oh, God.
This.
Oh, goodness.
Is a scrapbook I put together for myself, my senior year of high school.
Oh, my gosh.
Right before I was leaving home in Atlanta, Georgia. I still have it. I was 17 years old.
I love the fact that it says album.
Album.
Everyone, and just for those of you listening,
you don't know what it is.
It's this. Oh, it's kind of like leather bound, album. Or pleather outside.
It's a fake. Yeah.
And in block letters and gold printing, it says album. The A, the L, and the M are fading a little bit because Robbie has had. How old is that book now?
This was 1981, 82, probably. I did this myself because, oh my God, this is just coming back to me.
That's a 40-year-old album, dude.
In my bedroom, when I was a kid, when I would do like a show, a community theater play or something, I'd take the program or the poster and I would tape it on my wall.
Yes.
And I had all this, you know, I had posters and other stuff around. Right. But my room was like wallpapered with my memorabilia or my, you know, my high school experience.
Yes.
When I was leaving home after I graduated high school, my mom was selling the house and she was going to move back to North Carolina with her family.
Oh, right.
But I didn't want all that stuff thrown out. So I'm like, what am I going to do? Like when I'm not coming back home. So I'm like, I'll just put all, you know, kind
you
of a timeline.
Everything. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to get through this real quick.
Please, please.
This was my very first. Oh, it's getting messed up from the. Because it's green. This is a green color.
Oh, no.
Okay, so not all of it, but this was my very first play I ever did. That's a newspaper ad
for the Wizard of Oz
at the Atlanta Children's Civic Theater.
I love it.
I'm not going to go through this whole thing.
But do you actually have a photo of you and John Schneider? That's my question.
Oh, yeah, I do. Okay. Oh, my gosh. Here it is.
Oh, my God. Is that you in the... Where are six of us.
Okay. I said five, so there's six of us.
Okay, where are you?
Can you show me? I'm sitting on top.
Oh, that's I'm you sitting, on top. Yeah. Is that Schneider to your left, right? Or your right, if you're...
I guess he would be...
He's in the left of frame, though, right? So...
Yes.
Yeah, that's him. Okay, yeah. With that. Yes.
Oh, my God, this thing's falling apart.
Bo Duke, right? Oh, isn't he Bo or Luke? He's Bo. He's Bo Duke.
Bo Duke.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I'm just going to pull this out.
Pull it out.
Trunk stop players. Oh, let me go a little bigger.
Get closer. Look at Robbie's face. You are so young. John Schneider looks like John Schneider. That does not look like you.
That's me and John Schneider and David Wildman.
So you're on the underneath. You're the, oh my goodness. You know who you look like back then?
Look at that for booking. Oh my gosh. Look at that. That's insane. Okay. That's my first. I am more excited that you brought this up than any TV show I ever did in my life. That's hilarious.
How old were you in that?
I must have been a 13 or 14 years old.
Probably. Okay, because the thing is, I look at that picture. That doesn't look
anything
like you. You're a kid, definitely. That doesn't look anything like you right now. You know who that looks like? That looks like Kate's son, Alex, when he was a kid.
Oh, that's funny.
A little bit.
All right. I'm gonna go through a couple more things. Right around this time, I did another play with the Children's Theater that I got into called Tom Sawyer. I played Huck Finn, and I was so proud of this picture because I was acting up a storm, just acting up a storm.
Oh,
so
my dramatic. Gosh. Can you just, you need to describe it to our listeners, though, Robbie. Describe that photo. Just what are you doing in
Huck
that photo?
Huck Finn is mad. He's hurt and angry and just... So sad.
Look at this. Wow.
A few years later, I did The Sound of Music with this children's theater. And because I had done a couple local productions, they put an ad in the paper with my name as if people are going to come.
because of your name, yes.
15-year-old Robbie McNeil. Whoa, this is crazy.
Man, I need a time machine to be invented yesterday so then I can come to watch you do all these little plays. I would love to have seen you in all these productions when you were just a young man.
Yeah, here's another one. There's me at the piano. Yeah,
that looks more like you now.
Yeah.
That looks more like you with a little cross of something else. I'm feeling a little Ethan Hawke there, maybe.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
This thing is falling apart in my hands.
I can't believe you still have that. That's amazing. Good for you.
I can't believe I still have it either.
Yeah. We talk about this all the time. I ask you about, where's that one thing? You're like, I don't know. We got lost in the move or that's gone. Or I have no idea. So there's a lot of items that we've talked about in the past that have kind of went by the way of the dodo bird. And then now you have this one album that you pull out.
It's crazy.
You've never shown me that album. That's
the first
time. There
is so much stuff in here.
There's a lot of mystery.
My very last thing I'm going to show you is that year I graduated high school and I was going off to New York. I needed a headshot.
Oh, God.
And back then, when you were auditioning for like commercials and things, they would want like a composite where you had like your character look. It wouldn't just be one shot,
correct.
Maybe two or three on a
different
frame.
Looks on there. Yeah.
Yeah. So
a sportier look or more business.
Here's my,
sorry. Oh my goodness.
Look at that.
Robbie, please.
Look at that.
I see the top picture, but bring the lower ones closer to frame so I can see. What is that pensive? Are you holding a flower?
I'm looking at a flower.
You're only...
I'm looking at a flower.
Sorry, bring that. Just bring that photo closer to frame.
Oh,
the flower one. The flower one alone. I just want to.
That's my modeling look. There's my JCPenney's modeling look.
That's your JCPenney modeling look.
Or GQ maybe.
The other one with the flower shows that you're artistic and sensitive.
Yeah.
Maybe you're a poet of some sort, and you are a poet now that you do limericks. And on the top. Are you trying to? Oh, you're just holding on to the
like a goal,
soccer
net.
Kind of showing that you're athletic. side. Yeah,
I can smile.
And everyone, just so you know, this is how you had to have a headshot if you were going to audition for commercials back in the day. You had to show them a mixture of looks, like, okay, he can be the young sporty guy. He could be a little bit more dressed up, or he can be pensive holding a flower.
Yeah, exactly.
And thinking about life. So,
yeah. Oh my God, I can't believe.
What a tour de force.
Our little chat about what credit are you going to bring up? And it's led
that's
to
how
this.
It began. Yes, I couldn't. I was like, I'm running out of credits for you. So, Robbie,
no, just, I got plenty more.
Okay. I'm happy. Wow. Wow is right.
That is a
wow's a wow. Wow.
Yeah, that is a like a way back time machine.
Oh, man.
Right there. That's
wow.
Cool.
That was special. I gotta say, I've never seen any of those images. My first time. I'm very excited.
Most people in the world have not seen it, unless you were in my bedroom in 1982. Childhood bedroom. You didn't see that.
But it was during one of our Admiral Zoom call sessions, and one of the admirals had a question, and that question was, would either of you be interested in writing your memoirs? And now look at all this source material and images you can put in your memoirs.
I know.
You could just have a whole center section of all these little, everything from that album.
Of them in there.
Everything
there's
from that album can go into that. And I think
I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I pulled that off my wall. That would be the lesson and the lesson of this podcast that I've learned is like, you know, sometimes you don't appreciate the things that you did in the past or that you experienced in the past, mm-hmm. unless you really take some time and reflect on it. Mm-hmm. Like I think this podcast has taught me that, like taking a look back, spend a little time to really reflect on it.
Yeah.
And my appreciation just grows so deep. And same with that stuff, you know, childhood memories. And
I'm going to offer up one more lesson for all our listeners and viewers out there. And that is to store all your old belongings and scrapbooks in watertight containers.
Do not use a binder that says album.
No, that's good. That's okay. But that old album needs to be in a watertight container. Because if you recall, I might have told you this, I had a flood at my house in Hollywood Hills, which took out all my albums from when I was in grade school and in high school. All that is gone and ruined by the water. And I'm so bummed because none of that was converted to a digital copy. So it's gone forever, but you've got your stuff. So that would be a great thing for you to include in your future memoir. Yes.
In my book.
Okay. Start thinking about a name for your memoir now.
It's
going to
be called Album. Album, the Robbie Duncan McNeil story.
This is why this guy have said that this man is one of the funniest people I've ever met, because he comes out of left field with these very simple statements that just crack people up.
It looks good on the front of a book, as you see.
That should be the book cover. It should just be that album.
Yes, album.
Perfect. I love it. Okay. People will be confused, but they'll be excited at the same time. Okay, this week our episode is Tinker, Tenor, Dr. Spy.
Oh.
Yes. Yes. So without further ado, let us leave this cyberspace area and go watch this episode and come back with our recap and discussion.
Great.
Tinker, Tenor, Dr. Spy.
All right. See you soon. Thanks, everybody.
Patreon patrons, stay tuned for your bonus material. Well, we're back from watching Tinker, Tenor, Dr. Spy. My goodness. All right, let's just jump right into it. Let's just go right into our poetry synopsis. Let's not waste any time.
Okay.
Here is my haiku for Tinker, Tenor, Dr. Spy. Acceptable risk. Doc dreams himself the hero. Sits in the big chair.
Nice.
Thank you.
Okay, here we go with our limerick for Tinker, Tenor, Dr. Spy. A hero, competent and popular with the ladies on board. The doctor is daydreaming of all things unexplored. Phlox is mistaken. Reality is shaken. He's a mess, but he's earned that award.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good.
By the way, he gets the award at the end. We never see it again. Like, wouldn't you wear medals, or wouldn't that be somewhere I don't know.
Maybe just, that was still part of his dream. That's still his algorithm.
Maybe this
still
whole thing. That's very funny.
This whole episode never happened. So,
yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Tinker Tenor Dr. Spy, Joe Manosky wrote the script. I have to say, it's a really good script.
It is.
Like in its detail, it's good moment to moment in terms of the dialogue. It's funny. Yeah. It's on point. Yeah. It's all that. And the structure is almost perfect. Like it really is a great script. I think Joe did a phenomenal job.
Joe knocked it out of the park with this one. Story by Bill Vallely, who we don't really, I don't think we've ever heard of this person until this time, until this
who
episode.
Is Bill
really?
Vallely?
Vallely. Just some lucky guy who pitched the story and
I don't think he pitched or wrote or anything for any other episode. This is the only one.
I think you're right. You're right.
I do know that he is a comic book guy. I did, you know. He has written some comic books and he's even an artist. He's done some illustrations. So he definitely is in the genre, you know, in the world of our show, but I've never heard of him before.
Kudos to Bill for the one story that he sold to the Voyager writing staff. So good job.
Yeah. I did hear, by the way, that this story originally, I'd be curious if Bill Vallely pitched a Neelix version of this or if it was a Doctor version. Because I did hear. I did hear that there was early talks of this were about Neelix daydreaming.
Wow.
And that then they, when they maybe made the change to the Doctor, it brought in a whole different kind of sci-fi opportunity, but that they were that it was originally maybe Bill Vallely pitched a Neelix story. I don't know.
Yeah. And that would have been a completely different episode, I feel.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
Just, it wouldn't have had the same nuance and the same levels that this episode has with the Doctor.
Absolutely.
And also, you know, at this point, really, it's again a lot of focus on Janeway, the Doctor, and Seven in seasons 6 and 7. So it makes sense that they kind of tinkered it and made it for you like that. I said they kind of tinkered with this.
Oh, I see what you did.
For
I see what you did there.
You got it? Okay. Yeah. And they made this episode for the Doctor. And you know, I think the end result was fantastic. Again, one of my non-Kim episodes for sure.
Yeah. I thought it was great. Directed by John Bruno.
Yeah.
Now, John Bruno is a friend of Bob Picardo's.
Mm.
I think John, I don't know how, this is the first time he directed for us, but I think this is a phenomenal job of directing. It's the comedy moments are played beautifully. There's some transitions with vis effects that I had never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't done things quite that way. John Bruno comes from a visual effects background. I know that. I know that. I think maybe Bob worked with John on Innerspace or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like he knows John Bruno as a vis effects supervisor, and that may have been how John got into the Voyager camp. I don't know.
Do you recall any memories of John at all?
I remember liking him a lot. He definitely, in my memory, he came off as kind of a visual guy. He was a visual effects guy. And my memory is that I felt like, oh, his shot making, his planning is airtight. Like I felt a lot of confidence with John Bruno on the set in the, you know, the technical aspects and just kind of shot making and telling the story with the shots he was coming up with. So yeah, I liked him a lot. And I think he and Bob are still good friends. So,
yeah, my memory of John was that he was somewhat of an introvert.
Yeah.
I feel
he's
like
quiet,
he's
kind
very
of quiet.
Very quiet. And it was sort of like I couldn't really gauge. Like, I remember going up to him and asking him about something in a scene that I was in. And I just couldn't gauge one way or the other how he felt. It was almost like his response was very, you know, he was hard to read for me. But again, really good director. He did his he did his job quite well.
I thought the writing and directing on this episode is some of the best in the series, and it's really, really, it's just tight. It's good. Solid. It's funny that, you know, talking about John's personality being a little introverted or slightly kind of vis effects nerdy in those areas, it's funny to see how the comedy plays so well. And one of the things I noticed was there was a lot of classic moments John did with just kind of locked off shots where a character might pop into the frame, do something, a reaction, and pop out.
Get out.
Yeah. That is a classic. It's hard comedy. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of comedy and I've made the mistakes myself of moving the camera on the joke or, you know, panning or pushing
and
in on the joke.
You don't need to. You don't need to.
It undermines the comedy.
Yeah.
And there's moments, you know, where the doctor would pop up with a funny face and something in his hands and then pop out.
Right.
And whether it was by design or whether it was just accidental, John set the stage for great comedy in this episode. He really did a great job with that. So, but it's funny because I don't remember him being a hilarious person. He's very, like you said, kind of quiet and sort of, you know, professorly or something, you know?
Yeah, or librarianly, you know?
Yeah, librarianly.
Yeah. But you know, nothing against all our lovely librarian listeners out there, of course. I'm just saying that, yes, he definitely seemed quite subdued. It wasn't, he wasn't like Frakes. If Frakes comes on a set to direct, he's
a lot of personality.
He's a tsunami of energy that coming on. And Bruno was the exact opposite, most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's just jump into this. Okay.
Let's talk about the guest stars. Mm-hmm. Real quick, we had Jay Leggett playing Phlox. I thought he was great.
Yeah,
he was awesome.
That name?
Jay Leggett?
No, his character
name. Oh, Phlox.
Yeah.
At first I was like, wait a minute.
That's familiar.
That's John Billingsley on Enterprise.
John Billingsley's character. Spelling too. It's like
Spelling. I think from what I looked up, this was the inspiration for naming John Billingsley's character Phlox. Well, they just liked the name a lot.
Yeah.
Although different alien species, different everything. Okay, so Jay Leggett, who plays Phlox, his very first job was in 1988 in a movie, a low budget action suspense film, I guess, called Trapped Alive, 1988. And the summary of this movie, his first film, goes a little something like this. Jay Leggett's first film: several escaped prisoners and two hostage women, along with a sheriff's deputy, find themselves trapped in a mine shaft where a cannibalistic mutant is hunting them for food. That's his auspicious debut, Jay Leggett.
B-movie fodder. Okay, yes, all right.
Yes, it was B-movie. Jay Leggett did a fabulous job. And I'm sad to say he did pass away in 2013.
Oh!
He was a young man. He was 50 years old.
What?
I know, very sad. But he was so good in this episode. I'm so glad we have his performance. I thought he was great. Okay, our next actor who plays Phlox's boss, I think the character is the Overlooker. This actor's name is Googie Gress. Googie Gress. And I saw on his IMDb or somewhere that it said when he was a baby, his dad would call him Goo Goo Baby. And so it became his nickname as a kid, Googie. And it just stuck. So he took his nickname as his acting name, Googie Gress. His very first job that I could find was a TV movie in the 80s called Babes in Toyland. So it sounds like a holiday film.
Yeah.
You know, like a movie of the week.
Okay.
But Babes in Toyland starred Keanu Reeves and Drew Barrymore.
Oh, my goodness.
Googie Gress was his first job. Yeah.
You got to love that name.
Googie
Gress.
Googie Gress. And there was another one of these aliens, an actor named Robert Greenberg, played sort of the crewman there. And his first job was in 1986 in a horror film called Chopping Mall, which is actually a cult classic, Chopping Mall.
Who did he play?
He was like the crewman on the alien ship. He was the one.
Oh, he was the other guy. He said a couple of lines. Yes, yes.
He had a few lines. Yeah. Then Phlox at one point, Phlox says, oh, God, I made a big mistake.
He has a conversation with him. Yes.
He has a little brief conversation. That's Robert Greenberg. Okay, so let's dive right into the episode. So the very first shot is very cool. You see sort of stars filling the frame, and you hear the doctor sort of setting the scene of some place. I think he's talking about Mantua and painting a picture of this beautiful place. And he steps into a profile shot, and then he turns and almost looks in the camera, which is, it was just a cool opening shot. It was very different than the way we normally, like, we don't normally do that. We don't normally look at the camera. So you know immediately we're either in a fantasy or I don't know. We don't know.
Well, you don't know what's happening. As an audience member, you're sitting here wondering, like, what is going on, which really engages you as a viewer. So smart move there.
Yeah. But he paints this picture, and then as the camera moves back and we widen out, we realize the whole crew is sitting there for this lecture or demonstration. We don't really know what's happening. I love that opening shot as it sort of reveals the crowd. You see everybody looking a little bored. You see Neelix asleep. He's in the front row with his eyes closed. It's very funny. But then the doctor sets the scene of Mantua, and he starts to sing an opera number, La Donna Mobile, classic Italian opera. And I love some of the looks, like Harry's deadpan look was hilarious.
I don't know what I was doing. I almost feel like that's a do-over scene for me, because everyone's
really
because everyone's kind
of, you made me laugh.
I'm glad I made you laugh. And that was my choice as an actor, to be really just perturbed with the whole situation. But I think everyone was really happy in this dream like sequence. Well, we don't know it's a dream sequence at this
point. I don't know, because he starts singing and Kate has a pained look on her face.
Have a pained look?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
No, I think she's got a pained look. You're just in shock. I'm a little confused. And then Tuvok starts crying.
Yeah, he starts crying.
And then Paris looks over and says something like, "You okay?" And then he gets angry. And this leads us, while the doctor continues to sing opera, into a fight. And he shoves Paris back into some chairs. Harry and Chakotay try to grab Tuvok and
Restrain him.
Yeah, restrain him. And they flings both of you off, and a big dramatic move. Mm. And then there's this extra with a phaser that I love this moment. The Tuvok grabs the phaser from the extra, and the extra just kind of has a really awkward dramatic look, and then just sort of freezes, like doesn't fight anymore. It was very funny to me.
He's going through Ponfar. He's going through the Vulcan ritual of Ponfar once every 7 years. If you don't have Nookie, you go crazy.
And the doctor continues to sing. I'm happy to sing this version of the opera song if you like.
Can you?
Goes a little something like this.
Let's hear it.
Bum, 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 bum. Tuvok, I understand. You are a Vulcan man. You have just gone without for 7 years about. Paris, please find a way to load a hypospray. I will give you a sign. Just aim for his behind. Hormones are raging, synapses blazing, it's all so there. And then Paris tosses the hypospray into his hand. Very illogical, illogical. And then he hyposprays Tuvok.
Nice.
I loved that little song.
Yeah.
I had to write it down. So funny.
Thank you for singing it. I appreciate that.
All the little cuts to all the reactions were hilarious. The lyrics were hilarious. It was funny. So we go through this fantasy sequence. Clearly it's a fantasy at this point. It's so ridiculous. And then we hear, as he's catching flowers, we hear doctor.
Doctor.
Doctor. And we cut to a close up, and he's kind of, you know, zoning out in his chair in sick bay.
Yeah, in his office in sick bay.
In his office. And it's B'Elanna, and she wakes him up, and she's like, "Hello." And he apologizes. And she says maybe she'll have to run a diagnostic on his hearing subroutine. Like, he's not paying attention. And he basically says, "I was just letting my mind wander," which is, we've never heard him talk like that. So we know that he's.
Something's up.
Something's up. He's having some fantasies or something. They continue in sick bay talking. He says he wants to go on the away mission. And B'Elanna says, "Sorry, you're not on the list. We've made the crew assignments." And he's like, "I wanted to go take photos of this canyon." Like, grabs his camera, She says, nope, not this time. And he'll just have to use his imagination is kind of how we go out in the scene. So we're definitely know that's the theme of our episode.
I do kind of like, because we come back when he breaks out of the daydream and she goes, it's and Torres is there. Then we go to commercial break and then we come back into the sick bay. And then you just talked about what happened in there. But she does say, Torres does say, if you aren't working on anything, just deactivate yourself and save us the energy. And it was almost, almost like this sort of like throwaway, like, you're not important. We don't need you. So that kind of sets the tone a little bit of how the doctor is starting to feel
his point of view. Slighted. Yeah, he's feeling like he's not important.
Yeah.
She had some good stuff in this episode, B'Elanna.
She did. She did. And I liked that intro scene with her and the doctor. I felt that that was the most natural sounding that Torres has been up until now. It was really, really good on her part. Okay.
Well, it's interesting also coming off of Barge of the Dead.
Yes.
Such an intense episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That she sort of feels cleansed a bit here.
Yeah. You know, that's like there's a breakthrough observation. In her character. Great observation. And if anything, you're right. After going through so much drama in the prior episode, now she gets an episode where it's almost like all the pressure has been released. You know, all that half Klingon pressure has been released and she's able to just, she's lighter now. And that's how I felt. She was lighter in this episode. It was wonderful.
It was nice.
Yeah.
We go to the bridge. Chakotay walks in the bridge and he's kind of taken aback. He looks on the view screen and there's a beautiful nebula, gorgeous big nebula. And Janeway says, it showed up just a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. And he shares a pad with her. It's notes from the doctor here. And he basically says it's a formal grievance. And it's very fun.
Against the crew. It's like not just one person. It's against everybody, right?
Yes, yes. Starts listing off his grievances, his treatment by the crew, rude behavior.
Yeah.
It cuts to Paris turning around like me.
I'm like, huh? Okay. Why are you cutting to Tom right now? Huh?
Yeah. Tom definitely took that personally.
Yeah.
Ultimately, he's like, it's failure to acknowledge the sentience of his program, that he is growing and changing.
Right.
That he wants to be considered a sentient member of the crew.
And his final request on the pad is that he be made captain in the event of a catastrophic emergency.
Yes.
That's a tall order there.
Yes.
Tuvok responds, well, protocol dictates that either he or Commander Chakotay can go speak with the doctor on these grievances. And Janeway says, no, I'll do it.
Yep. Yeah. And then we go to a kind of a space shot of the Voyager flying by this nebula.
Yep.
And it's a great shot as the ship goes by, the camera sort of pushes into the nebula a bit.
Yeah.
And we start to reveal that there's a ship hiding inside of it. A cool looking ship.
A very cool looking ship, I might add. Yes.
Yeah.
It almost like when I saw that ship and then I compared it to other alien ships we've seen, I thought, wow, they had time and money on this one. I mean, this one looks great. I wonder if
John Bruno directing because of his visual effects background.
Oh.
If all around the vis effects on this, whether by his design,
guidance
he had notes, or whether by just our crew kind of going, hey, we got one of our own doing, a high level vis effects guy doing this episode. Let's step it up a little bit.
They definitely stepped it up. It was upstepped all the way.
We go inside their ship. I love this makeup, by the way. This cool makeup, these aliens. I thought it was really great.
The makeup was wonderful. The wardrobe reminded me a little bit of Dune, the Harkonnen, with their sort of how their
collars.
The collars are really high. With those aliens, and just like these aliens, they're high collared, looks really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was very cool. Basically, one of the aliens in there has been scanning the ship. They don't recognize this ship.
It's not in their database.
Yeah. And the boss man basically says, this is an unacceptable risk. Mm-hmm. Don't waste our time and resources. But this crewman, who will realize is Phlox later on, will be his name. He says, I figured out a way to, he's got an idea. He says, maybe we can penetrate the hull with a micro tunneling sensor.
Mm-hmm.
And then he could maybe tap into Voyager's computer and see their weapons and defense systems. And
Bossman's boss like, no, is still like, nah,
no, let's not do it. And he says, well, I already asked the hierarchy. So he's kind of doing what the doctors do. You know, he's kind of stepping out of bounds a bit on his ship.
Yeah, because is he even allowed to? I thought it was always the boss that submitted, you know, requests to the hierarchy. But I guess anyone can do it, I suppose.
Well, he said he already did it.
Yeah.
And
it was approved.
Yeah, I thought that was great. We go to the briefing room next. This is
this is the scene
you've talked about.
Yes. Do you remember when we talked about this, our discussion to this, and how I said that this, I really wish that we had more scenes or more episodes that had comedy like this. And now you see this. Now you see this scene.
Yeah, it's very funny.
In the briefing room, there's a general discussion of the best way to retrieve this Antonium ore from the planet's surface. So everyone's in there talking and discussing. But yet, that's not really the A storyline in this scene.
That's the B storyline. That's the cover
that's
for
the
real
cover.
Scene.
Real scene.
Because everyone's rambling on, then we see the doctor gets a funny look on his face and he looks underneath the table. And B'Elanna has a barefoot.
He's playing
and
footsie.
is rubbing his leg, playing footsie with her bare feet under there. And all of a sudden the music changes to saxophone music.
Yes.
Very funny. It's like really cheesy, you know, romance music.
Yes. Yes.
And
he
then
gets a note on his pad, right?
Gets a note on his pad. He looks around.
It says dinner tonight.
Looks to Neelix. Yeah. It's not Neelix.
Not Neelix. Yeah.
Looks over to Seven and she winks at him.
Yeah. It's clearly from her.
And then Janeway notices some of this. She's starting to notice some of this goings on. Janeway gets up and walks behind him and sort of caresses his head,
his bald head. Yeah.
His bald head. Shit. And then basically the scene devolves into the three women trying to out seduce the doctor. And
they're
sort of fighting over him. And then Janeway says she needs medical attention because her back is out and she takes
it's an old academy wound.
Yes. And takes his hand and lowers it all the way down to her rear end. And there's the doctor with his hand on her butt.
I think the script said it was her lower back is where she lowered it to.
Well,
but in the episode, it went lower than her lower back. It definitely did.
It went lower.
I love also the additional message on the pad from Seven when she sees that Janeway and Torres are sort of moving in on the doctor. She writes resist, so you know resistance is futile.
Right.
She's like resist, which is again
very silly, very fun. So. And then Janeway's had enough. She says, "Everybody out of here! You're all dismissed." And then off of the doc's reaction to that, we hear doctor, and he snaps out of it again. We go wide and see it's just him and Janeway in there, and she wants to discuss his list of demands.
But then they move, though. They move from there. So evidently from the meeting has ended, right? Everyone's left and she's talking. She goes, I want to discuss your demands. And then the next thing we know, they've now moved to the captain's ready room.
To the ready room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically in this scene, Janeway is very concerned about his request. You know, the doctor is pleading his case saying, you know, I'm sentient. I have a right to, you know, grow my program. And he basically wants to have his program include all tactical and strategic abilities of the ship because he wants to function as what he calls the emergency command hologram or ECH. Basically the backup captain, if there's any, you know, catastrophic event that happens. And she, you know, considers this and, but she says it would take months to do this. Like we can't, you know, we can't go down this road. It's not approved. There's nothing like this. She's like, no, sorry. When we get back to the Alpha Quadrant, I'll pass it along. Maybe back there they can explore this possibility.
Yeah, she said Starfleet may be able to assign a team of engineers. I'm going to recommend they assign a team of engineers to examine your proposal. But in this current, right now, I'm going to have to deny your request.
Mm-hmm.
So no, it's not going to happen.
So we cut out to the hallway and the doctor's walking along and he comes into the cargo bay. He heads from the hallway into the cargo bay.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, Seven approaches him, gives him a kiss. B'Elanna takes the other arm, and the ladies escort him into what looks like some kind of celebration party or something.
Is that how you got it? Okay.
Yeah. That's weird.
Well, I had, like, he walks in and everyone says, surprise! And then they come up and start kissing him and everything. So they're already there.
Everybody's already there.
Yeah.
But as he goes into the cargo bay, everyone's there for the celebration party, and the ladies are clearly still in love with him.
Very enamored with him.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.
We're now in the interior of the alien ship, and Phlox is speaking to a superior, and he says he's tried to access their internal sensors, but he couldn't get past the security encryption. Mm-hmm. But he says he's found something better, a holographic crewman. And he says he's tapped into the cognitive subroutines of this holographic crewman, and mm-hmm. now they can monitor everything. So he doesn't even need to get past the security encryption that Voyager has set up in terms of their internal sensors. He can monitor everything through this holographic crewman, and he can experience everything he's experiencing. And most importantly, Phlox tells his boss that he has discovered that Voyager is not in their database because they're not from this quadrant. Mm-hmm. They are alone. And not only are they alone, they're lost. They're lost and alone. And a few more hours of observation will give him all the information that they will need to tell the hierarchy about the defense of this ship, the weapons, the crew complement. And Phlox says that the social structure on Voyager is very, very different from their social structure. He talks mm-hmm. about how on his ship, Phlox only has one job. But the doctor does more than just practice medicine. He has access to the entire ship. He seems to be an expert on everything. And the captain just gave him authorization to command the bridge. And it was very exciting to see this ceremony.
I love when he does say, he seems to be an expert on everything. Yeah. Yeah. Like, yep. Yep. Yeah. The doctor thinks he's an expert
on everything as well. Yeah.
Yes.
The superior asks why he is not monitoring the doctor right now. And Phlox says, well, the link drops out intermittently, but it should be reestablished in a few minutes. And the boss man is satisfied with that, and he orders Phlox to maintain surveillance. Mm-hmm. But again, we now see that he's only tapped in when the doctor daydreams, and that's it. Yeah. He doesn't see anything else. And the daydream doesn't happen all the time, at least not yet. But he's seeing these strange little images of
He's
not
totally
reality.
Seeing fantasy of not
fantasy.
Reality.
That's all he's seeing.
Which is very funny.
Yes, absolutely hilarious. Now we're in sick bay.
Yep.
And we have a nice scene with the doctor and Neelix. The doctor is injecting Neelix with a hypospray, which is to help combat any possible allergens in the planet's atmosphere. He then asks Neelix if he would snap a few holo images for him. Mm-hmm. And then out of the blue, he asks if he daydreams or not. The doctor asked Neelix, does he daydream or not? And Neelix is like, well, I suppose. I mean, and then Neelix goes into this story about how Talaxians believe that fantasies and daydreams come from someplace else, another land, and that they slip into our minds and whisper about things we'd never imagined. And I just love that writing there.
Yeah,
it was
very poetic.
Very poetic, yes.
It was poetic, and it was also kind of echoing what's happening is that these other aliens are kind of slipping into the doctor's daydreams and
there you go.
Kind of getting these fantasies as messages. So it was a nice scene with Neelix and the doctor.
Yeah. And then Neelix asked the doctor if he daydreams, and he very quickly responds, "Of course not. I'm a computer program."
Yeah.
And then he says, "I prefer wide shots, Mr. Neelix, like David Livingston. If you're feeling creative, throw in a little ultraviolet." He didn't say Livingston, but I threw that in for you, Robbie.
So. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We go to the bridge next, and we start on Harry asking for a report, sending a message to a call to Paris, who's in a shuttle, I guess, on this away mission.
Actually, he's in the Delta Flyer.
Flyer. That's right. Mm-hmm. And Paris says, "Oh, yes, it's a beautiful view." And then suddenly we hear this noise and Paris says, "Mayday, mayday." And Tuvok says, it's the Borg. And then Tuvok looks at his hand and these nanoprobes kind of grow out of the back of his hand, which was very cool.
Yeah.
Really well done.
Yeah.
Tuvok says, "You have to relieve me of duty immediately." He's turning into a Borg.
Yeah.
Seven's got a message. She says, an assimilation virus has penetrated Voyager's hull,"
which is hilarious. Let's think about
this. Assimilation virus.
You can only be assimilated if the Borg drone shoots his tubules into you and the nanoprobes go in. You can't just send a virus and everyone starts turning into Borg. Again, cool though in his fantasy.
In his fantasy is very cool. Mm-hmm. Chakotay suddenly says, you know, I forget what he says, but Chakotay's like freaking out. And he's got these cool, I love the makeup that was sort of wrapped around his neck, like a snake or something. It was very cool.
Yeah.
So Chakotay's turning Borg. Harry says there's incoming fire. The ship is hit.
Yeah.
Janeway hits the floor. I love that shot of her falling on the floor. Simple, but really action-packed, kind of effective moment.
Harry looks detail. Over.
Harry looks Jamie's over. He's got nanoprobes coming out of his face.
Well, Harry's like looking over at the doctor saying like, "Come on, doctor, turn into the ECH." And so that's when he does activate it into the ECH. His whole uniform turns into the command uniform. You see the pips popping up on the side.
It was super cool.
Yeah. I love Bob Picardo's line when he's talking to the Borg and he says, "Over my dead program," which was pretty darn funny. I love that.
Yes.
He activates the photonic cannon, which is clearly a made up weapon that does not exist on Voyager.
Yes.
But the earlier photon torpedoes that the doctor shoots at the Borg sphere doesn't do anything. But
he's got to use the imaginary photonic cannon weapon, the super weapon. He destroys the Borg ship. It explodes. We cut over to Phlox on the hierarchy ship and he's in shock.
Well, all of them, don't they all react to that? They go,
yes.
Like everyone watching the screen is just shocked.
The photonic cannon is so scary. And we go back to the bridge and now we're back in reality.
Yeah, with Harry's voice going, doctor, can you confirm?
What? Yeah, he wants readings.
Readings, yeah.
The readings, doctor.
Yeah.
And the whole crew is kind of turning around and notices that he's distracted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But my first thought was, why is the doctor on the bridge if he's monitoring people's
life signs?
What?
He doesn't need to be there. You're right.
He doesn't. Normally, if we are, you know, want life signs, we either get the readings ourselves or we call the doctor in sick bay
and he gives
where he's monitoring.
Yeah.
But we never get medical data from the doctor standing in that center console. But for this moment, it was the right place to be.
Yes.
We go back to a space shot with the hierarchy ship, and inside Phlox is saying, "This is a very dangerous ship." He's telling his captain, like, they've got this thing called a photonic cannon. And the captain's a little skeptical, but Phlox is like, "No, the doctor is unbelievable. He does it all.
Yeah, he's skeptical because he says, "We have no readings of any Borg in this region of space." Yeah, and he's like, "Well, I mean, I'm telling you,
but I saw
they
it.
And he's like, shot it.
Well, we
where's
didn't
the
see
debris?
Any debris?
And he's like,
where's the debris?
It's completely vaporized. It's annihilated.
Photonic,
nothing. Yeah.
The photonic cannon can do this." The captain's skeptical, but Phlox says the doctor is incredible. He does everything. And he goes down this list of things. Like he does this and that. And then he ends it with, And he's very attractive to all the females.
Hey, let me read off the list. He says the ECH is now in command. He is an impressive individual, a physician, an engineer, a warrior, and very attractive to the females. And so that this is his line. And he says, yes, we should attempt to avoid any interaction with this emergency command hologram, the ECH. And Phlox recommends a type 3 stealth assault. And the hierarchy approves of a stealth assault.
I love when they send these messages to the hierarchy.
You
I
like
love
that little machine?
They kind of put it in a little pad. They stick it in a slot. Yeah. And then there's like this clear sort of tube that you see the messages coming back.
Yeah.
I thought that detail, that specificity was really cool.
It also reminds you of your little message board too, probably. So
it does. Yes. I love my message. Okay. We go out into the hallway. Doctor's walking down the hall. Chakotay comes running up and says, "Doctor, you're incredible." Like Chakotay is just, you know, effusively just complimenting the doctor.
Right.
And you see the doctor starting to go, wait a minute, this is a little too far. So he says, "Computer, where's the location of Chakotay?" And computer says, "Chakotay's in his quarters."
Yeah. Now he knows something.
So now the doctor knows this is all.
His daydreams are now coming into everyday life, basically. There's an issue. The algorithms are malfunctioning.
Yep, he's realizing it.
We cut to engineering and we have Kim, Torres, Seven, and the doctor. The doctor is explaining to Torres, Kim, and Seven that he has been experimenting with introducing a new function into his program, cognitive projections, aka daydreaming. Yes. And the algorithms are malfunctioning. And he is starting to daydream whether he wants to or not.
I love what B'Elanna says. She says, you know what they say, a doctor who operates on himself has a pitak for a patient. Yes. And my first thought was, B'Elanna never uses Klingon references.
What?
I mean, very rarely. She does sometimes when she's angry, usually.
Yeah.
But not in like just a casual conversation.
Yeah, right.
Again, I thought, she's just coming off Barge of the Dead. Like she's really embraced some of her Klingon side. And so she's kind of using these Klingon references in ways that she didn't use them as often before.
Yeah.
Usually it was just when she was mad about something. She might, you know, throw in a little Klingon.
But yeah.
I thought that was just a nice connection of episodes.
A good catch. And it's just so cool how each of these scenes, they start out as completely normal. And then all of a sudden, it just morphs into the daydream. Torres and Seven begin fighting over the doctor all over again. And it's vicious. It's just vicious. And I feel like, in this daydream world, it's your lady, Torres, that has the biggest crush on the doctor.
Oh, yeah.
And it's her job to defend against all other suitors, meaning the captain and Seven. Mm-hmm. And she's vicious about it, absolutely vicious. And then all of a sudden, the fight is broken up by Kim basically exclaiming that the warp containment field is failing.
Yes, there's a big alarm. They all rush over to try to fix this thing.
The computer.
I love the computer.
Yeah, the computer first starts saying warp core breach in 30 seconds. Then a little bit later, warning, warp core breach a lot sooner than you think. And I thought, yes, this is
very funny.
This is Galaxy Quest right now. We're actually finally living that, you know, reality there with great comedy.
When the computer says warning, warp core breach a lot sooner than you think.
Yeah.
That's when the doctor all of a sudden goes, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And I love as it's melting down, Seven and B'Elanna both are looking over the warp core, and then they turn in unison and say, "The doctor."
That's their warp particles moment.
That's right their there. Warp particles
yes,
moment.
Yes. Because somebody has to get inside that warp core to eject it manually. And there's only one person who can withstand the radiation, and that would be the doctor. And that's when their warp particles moment happened.
Yeah. I love the unison talking.
Yes. But then we jump back. We jump back to the current reality without his daydreams. And Harry notices that the doctor is about to enter the warp core
like
and
he's climbing over the railing.
Yeah. And he has to save the ship. And Harry's like, what are you doing? And so of course, Harry and the gang have to rush over and physically pull him back.
The physicality that he's got is very Jerry Lewis. Is he being dragged back?
Oh my God.
It was very funny. And then we cut to a close-up of him in sick bay. And as the camera pulls back, we realize that he is just jumping from one daydream to the next. He's pacing around the surgical bay by himself.
And he's talking to nobody.
Torres tells Janeway he's just jumping from one scene to another. And my favorite part is he starts walking forward. He hits the force field. And he's like, excuse me, miss. Like, pardon me, miss. Yeah. Like, he bumped into some woman that we don't even see there, right?
It's very funny.
Torres has basically routed his subroutines to Holodeck 1 so that Harry and Seven can kind of monitor his fantasies. So we can kind of keep tabs on what's going on with him. Janeway actually brings up an interesting question. She's like, is that appropriate?
Yeah.
Do you think that's appropriate?
Spying, looking in on his fantasies. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and she has just been in a meeting with the doctor saying that we're going to show him a little more consideration. We're going to respect his sentience. And now here we are tapping his fantasies.
His private, reading his journal.
Yes. And obviously, he has not given permission for that, but we're gonna be doing this. But Torres says, look, this is going to give us the better idea. We're going to get a bigger picture of what's happening to him. It's going to help us fix him. We need to tap into this. As she says that, he then has a conversation with Neelix. He's, Mr. Neelix, how thoughtful. You baked me a cake. Oh, this won't get you out of your checkup. And so this whole thing is just absolutely hilarious to me. Yes. Kim chimes in and says, Kim to sickbay. Janeway's like, go ahead. And Kim says, you might want to have a look at this. Janeway goes, we're on our way. And the tag of this is he blows out the candles of his
the
cake.
Candles on the cake.
After the cake that's not there.
And he blows them all out and then he missed one, which is classic. Yeah. And he, one more.
You know, I feel funny. Like he probably did that. Right. I mean, I'm guessing the doctor. Probably. Yeah, he added that. Bob added that little lovely little touch there. Very funny, that button. We're in Cargo Bay 2 on the holodeck. And the EMH is the doctor is basically painting 7 of 9. And it's 7 is posing for him sort of all naturel. She's
in the nude.
He's
doing charcoal sketches of 7 in the nude.
Yes.
And the camera kind of dollies behind the back of 7 of 9.
Yeah.
And then it reveals the real 7 of 9 standing there in the holodeck version of the cargo bay.
Right.
Watching herself getting painted or drawn in the nude. And the first thing I thought was that a body double? It had to have been a body double.
Yeah, it was.
I don't remember. I wasn't in the scene, but you were in the scene.
I don't recall the name of the... I think it was her stand-in that did her body double for her.
Really?
Yes. I remember... I feel so bad. I can't remember her name, but... But that's who was actually lying there. And I also remember that was a closed set. That was a very limited number of crew members there. But anyway, so my favorite line is from Janeway. Janeway says, he does the hands very well.
That's very funny.
And Seven's like, well, apparently he's had a great deal of practice. Look at these. And there's all these other sketches that are there, these preliminary sketches.
Yeah, he's been drawing a lot of these.
A lot of these.
But I have to say, the sketches were like, they were the outlines of her figure and stuff, but there was nothing. They were totally
PG. Rated. They're PG, for sure. You'd say G? You'd say G
I would
rated?
Say G.
All right, they G-rated, were like,
They were like outline sketches.
Right.
Yeah, no detail at all of the nudes, but I almost wish we hadn't seen the sketches. I wish we had seen from behind, like lots of paper, but we don't see.
because it
would be more humiliating for Seven to feel like, oh my God, like he's drawn all these nudes of me and we never see them.
Good call.
And then I love this transition, by the way, because realize that this is just a holodeck and we go from, a fantasy or a daydream of drawing these nudes to a fantasy of the doctor on the bridge.
Yes.
And the transition was great because you guys are standing in the holodeck.
Yep.
And then it transforms to the bridge and then the doctor enters the close-up. So that was a cool cool transition. I liked it.
Very much so. So we start out with the doctor saying, computer, activate the emergency command hologram. So he can activate himself into the ECH at this point.
Yep.
And Kim's got the great line. This is the part I like, because the pips pop up on his collar. And of course, Harry never got the promotion. So this was a bit of a dig on Harry in a way. Janeway loves it. Nice touch. And then, of course, the EMH brings the photonic cannon online.
Yes, activate the photonic cannon. Janeway's like, the what? And Harry goes, well, it's a weapon he invented.
Yeah.
He really likes to save the ship.
Yeah. Harry then says, which means that this particular algorithm of him as the ECH is more easily accessible than the others. So Torres says, if we can isolate this algorithm, we might be able to stabilize his program. So we're kind of, you know, we're making a little bit of headway. So then we jump from the holodeck bridge to the holodeck mess hall.
Yeah.
Lovely scene here.
Yeah, great scene.
Oh, great my scene. Gosh.
The doctor is basically breaking up with B'Elanna. He's breaking up with her. They're sitting at a table.
Yes.
And Roxanne is sort of watching her, looking at herself, who's just her fake B'Elanna, is madly in love with the doctor. Will not let her go. She says, you just can't leave me.
The best line, EMH, aren't you forgetting someone? He needs you, B'Elanna, now more than ever. And of course,
B'Elanna looks behind her and sitting all alone in the corner of the mess hall is Tom with his little cup of coffee.
Don't you wave at her like, hi?
Yes, it is the most pathetic, hilarious reaction I've ever seen myself
You did such a good job with that reaction.
It was very funny.
I was so happy and so proud of you, Robbie. I was like, oh, Robbie knocked that reaction out of the park. Because if you can really make the audience laugh without even saying something, you got it going on. This reaction that you give when they look back at you is the best. And Torres says, forget him. He's not half the man you are.
Real B'Elanna, who's watching this She's done. I've had enough of this. I've had enough. And as they exit, they're kind of exiting the celebration. So we've kind of jumped to a different moment.
Right.
And Janeway stops because she hears the doctor basically expressing what's truly in his heart. He says, all I ever wanted was to live up to my full potential.
Yeah.
And Janeway stops. She kind of clocks this and he continues on, basically saying, I just want to help the people that I love.
Yeah.
And that really lands for Janeway.
Yeah. And that scene is the surprise party for him being ECH, I think. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've jumped around to all these daydreams and fantasies, but the last moment is Janeway really hearing that he loves this crew. That's a huge revelation for her. Mm-hmm. We go to the hierarchy ship next Phlox is worried. He's lost the connection.
Yeah.
I will say the opening of this, you see Phlox looking in a close-up and his hand is by his face.
Yeah.
And I love the makeup for this, but they didn't quite finish the hand. And so
they had some makeup on the hand, but not completely.
But it wasn't all complete.
Yeah.
And I wish they hadn't had his hand up by his face, because it made the makeup less effective. And I love this makeup. So I wish that hadn't been included.
Yeah.
But it was still, the makeup is phenomenal. Anyway, Phlox is, he's concerned because two assault vessels are on their way to join them for this type 3 attack that they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's starting to worry that he might've been wrong.
So he's trying to talk his boss out of it now. You know, he's like, the more I learn about Voyager, the more I wonder if it's even worth the hassle to even, and the overlook, his boss is like, the boss man's like, okay, we'll clarify. He's like, well, launching an attack against such a heavily armed vessel carries a great risk. And for what? A little antimatter and some dilithium. So everything he's saying
He's trying to backpedal big time.
Yeah.
And his boss does say, did you make a mistake? And he's like, no,
I haven't
made a mistake. And then Bossman leaves and said, we're going to continue on. And then he does admit to the crewman guy.
Devro is his name. D-E-V-R-O. Yeah. He goes, I made a terrible mistake.
I love was totally that. Wrong. How None terrible. Of this is yeah. real.
Well, because the minute he saw him popping up in every location back to back, he knew. Yeah. He says he did a little further investigation and he found out that he hasn't been monitoring his perceptions. He's been watching his dreams or his imaginings is how he says it. Mm-hmm. And I love that writing from Manosky, right?
Yeah.
Watching his dreams or his imaginings. I love this dialogue.
Yeah, it's great.
He goes, I'm not sure which, but none of this is real. So what am I going to do? So he's he's in a pickle. He's in a big pickle. He doesn't know what to do.
We're all in a pickle. We go to sick bay next and the doc's sitting there, but clearly a lot of, a worry and concern. Mm-hmm. Janeway appears and asks, she's just checking in on him. The last thing she saw was him saying, I just want to help the people I love. So that's really stuck with her.
Yep.
She really cares for him. And she comes in to check and he says, I'm really sorry. I feel exposed. I feel humiliated. I apologize for altering my program. And then she kind of reassures him. She says, look, we all daydream.
Yeah.
It helps us imagine other possibilities in life, which I thought was really good. She said, just hold off. Just don't do this anymore until we can figure out how to do it without hurting you.
Which means she's really kind of open to him having these daydreams. She's on his side. Exactly. She's on his side. But the good thing is that Torres has stabilized the Matrix and that none of these random daydreams are going to happen any longer. So she's fixed his program, basically.
Yeah. We go to the captain's ready room.
Yeah.
Chakotay enters with the ship status report.
Yep.
They basically just discuss the potential for the doctor to be the emergency captain.
Yeah. Well, she was looking through, they were looking at Federation law and there's no legal precedence for granting command positions to holograms. They don't exist. It hasn't happened before.
Yeah. She wants to give him what he wants, to expand his potential, but she can't find a way to do exactly what he's asking. Mm-hmm. We go back to sick bay. The doctor is prepping busy work, basically. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then he hears a crowd in sick bay and suddenly looks over to Trey where he just got a medical device and there's a champagne glass. And he's like, oh no.
It's
happening again. I love this because it was a low angle shot of him, kind of in a close up, getting things off the tray and moving a little. But it was a very smart move by John Bruno because as you looked up, they turned all the lights off in sick bay. So normally we see the whole ceiling is lit up with lights.
Yeah.
But because it was kind of darker and they were looking at the dark part of the room.
Yeah.
When he saw the champagne glass, it was a much smoother transition into the cargo bay set, which is dark ceilings and all. So it was just a little detail on the front end that helped the transition work really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
But we do transition into the cargo bay. We're back to the celebration party. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly Phlox appears in this daydream.
Yeah.
And he said,
May I please have a word with you, doctor? And then I don't recall dreaming you up.
Yeah. And he says, no, I'm real. I'm just transmitting myself as a simulation into your dream.
Right.
And he's like, I can prove it. So the doctor does agree to go talk with him. And Phlox basically pours it all out. He says, this ship is going to be attacked.
And it was Phlox who kind of tweaked with his program so that his daydreaming would happen again. Because this is the only way that Phlox could insert himself into those daydreams in order to get this message to him.
Yep. They find a private spot. He basically says that his spying has been the problem in his program. The reason that it's been malfunctioning like this is because Phlox was spying in through the program. Mm-hmm. He basically spills the whole truth to the doctor.
Yeah.
And he says, the problem here is we're not like you guys. And the hierarchy doesn't tolerate these kinds of mistakes. Mm-hmm. The hierarchy doesn't tolerate people expanding their possibilities. So he stepped out of line. He made a mistake, he's going to get in big trouble.
Yeah.
And he does say to the doctor that he really admires him.
Yeah. and that he's grown to care for the Doctor as well, you know, in short amount of time. But the most important message that Phlox has for the Doctor is that an attack is imminent. There will be two other hierarchy ships that will be arriving very soon, and less than an hour away, really. And he just says to the Doctor, I can help you avoid this confrontation. I can assist you, you know, and the Doctor is always is asking, like, well, why would you help us? And again, like you said earlier, he knows that he is in trouble because the hierarchy does not tolerate mistakes or misinformation. And if they learn of his error, he will lose his livelihood, is what he says. That means he's going to lose everything. So he'll be Phlox, put in jail.
Phlox definitely cares about the Doctor. He's grown to admire him and like him, but he also cares about himself. So he's trying to make a deal that'll help them both.
Yeah.
And so we go to the bridge next, and the Doctor enters the bridge and says, we're about to be attacked.
Yeah.
And this is like exactly what's been happening with his malfunction. So
there's a lot of eye rolling at this point.
A lot of eye rolling. Like, here we go again.
Yep.
And they say, we haven't detected anything. Like, what are you talking about, Doctor? And Janeway is pissed at him, by the way, that he disobeyed her direct order.
Right, because because in her mind, he's reacted. She thinks he reactivated his daydreams.
His daydreaming stuff. Yeah. She's like, why'd you do this? I told you, you know, let us figure out how we can do this the right way.
Yeah.
And he seems to be back in the same groove. But he says, no, I can prove it. He says the aliens showed him, Phlox showed him how to compensate for their cloaking field.
So we can now detect them. So he hands a pad to Harry.
Yeah.
And I love the look that I give to Jane when I'm like, am I going to do this? It's this, the nonverbal kind of looks that Harry has with Janeway. And it just, I love that, because now you see season six, it's like everyone knows everyone's rhythm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Harry knows what's going on. Janeway knows what's going on with Harry. Janeway just gives a quick nod, and Harry punches in the coordinates and the right pattern to be able to detect the ships. And lo and behold, the Doctor's right. Yes. There are three ships out there, 600 million kilometers, headed right for us. Janeway requests on-screen maximum magnification. And basically, the Doctor says the alien will not help us unless we help him. Mm-hmm. And Paris is, what if this is all part of their attack? What if this is a ruse? And Chakotay says he's already helped us compensate for their cloak. I'm inclined to believe him. Mm-hmm. So Janeway believes him too. And she says, set a course away from here at maximum warp. And the Doctor says, well, that's only going to delay the confrontation. They have vessels, you know, hidden throughout this entire sector. They're going to find us. Janeway says, does your friend Phlox have a plan? And the Doctor says, well, they're running a type 3 stealth assault, and they will not decloak until they're right on top of us, at which point they're going to fire a warning shot across the bow and then come at demands for supplies and tech. And if we don't comply, they will destroy us. And fortunately, the alien Phlox has promised to transmit the resonance frequencies of their phasers, which is going to help us basically, you know, take out their weapons. And Tuvok says, and in return, what do we have to give them? And the Doc says, well, in return, he mistakenly informed his superiors that I was in command of Voyager. So to keep himself from being demoted, he wants us to maintain that ruse.
Doc's gonna have to be the captain.
When they open the channel, I have to be sitting in the captain's chair. And he even apologizes. He goes, I'm sorry, captain, but that's what he insisted. He wants that. And Janeway doesn't even, she doesn't even skip a beat. She's like, I guess it's time to turn fantasy into reality. So she goes with that. She's with the she's with the game plan.
We go to sick bay next, and it's a great scene in here with Harry prepping the Doctor for being the captain, and Harry's working on some panels there, but the Doctor is panicking here. He's just, he's having a meltdown, and Harry's sort of smiling and kind of reassuring him, like, I felt the same way.
Yeah. When I was put in command of the night shift, you know, and the chair looked really big. I wanted really to
just disappear into the chair.
Yeah.
Harry basically says to the Doctor that daydreams are to test possibilities, right? To consider new possibilities and try out, you know, ideas of what our potential is. Mm-hmm. And Harry ultimately says, consider this a field test.
Yes.
So, so Harry gives him a little pep talk, and we go over to the hierarchy ship. And now they're arriving near Voyager, and the captain's like, "Hey, I don't see any Borg damage around here.
Right?
Like, you said that they destroyed the Borg,
right?
And they had a battle with the Borg. I don't see any
where's
damage.
The hull damage from the where's Borg the attack? Yeah, it's not
and
there.
So Phlox is like, "Oh, they repaired it. Yes, they repaired it. That's what they did."
Yeah.
Captain thinks about that and goes, "Okay, let's prepare for a Type 4 assault."
Yeah.
Phlox is like, "What? No, that'll we can't do that.
That's not the plan. Yeah,
it's not the plan. Well, that'll drain energy." And the captain's like, "You may be mistaken about this whole, Borg thing. All of this we may be off here. Caution is in order." And he asks the hierarchy, and they say, "Yep, do the Type 4.
Type 4.
Oh,
yeah.
I love that little pad they have to stick in to communicate. It's cool. It seems a little excessive, like they could just make a phone call, but
yes.
But it's pretty cool.
I feel like that could be a cosplay at Dragon Con, the hierarchy, the messaging machine. Someone could just build that and wear that,
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that part. We go back to the bridge. The doc enters the bridge, captain on the bridge, I think Chakotay says, or somebody says.
Yeah. No, you say it, actually.
Oh, I say it. Yeah. Somebody
Barris says it.
Captain on the bridge. Doc is in the captain's uniform.
So what I loved was after he shows up on the bridge, he comes out of the turbo lift and he's so tentative. And then Harry pats him on the back, sort of like, "It's your time." And he reacts to that like he jumps, like someone scared the bejesus out of him, which is, again, he's so nervous that even that little support tap by Harry scares him. He jumps and he comes down to the level where the captain's chair is. And he's just looking at the chair. He doesn't even know what to do. And Chakotay says, "It's not going to bite. It won't bite. Okay. You can sit down in it." And Paris has that lovely line, "What I wouldn't give right now for a whoopee cushion."
Harry's
like, "A what? A whoopee cushion." And you say that it's ancient technology.
Yes. His response is, "It's ancient technology."
Yeah.
And then he finally does sit down. The doctor finally does tentatively, terrified, sits down.
Yeah.
Takes a breath for a second. And then there's a little beep on the console and he
shocks again. Yeah.
Yes. Milking the comedy.
He's milking it there. Chakotay says, "Captain, we're ready to proceed." And now we jump to astrometrics and we see that Janeway is monitoring the entire situation there. She says, "Acknowledge, Commander." Seven says, "The internal comm link is active. No one will be able to hear you but the doctor." So essentially, it's sort of this, Cyrano de Bergerac moment where Janeway is whispering.
Janeway's
going to be whispering
whisper
the lines
in his ear. Yeah, exactly.
In his ear, just to say what needs to be said to the hierarchy.
Yes, and the assumption is that he's only going to do what the captain says. He's
right.
Going to stick to the the plan.
He'll stick to the plan.
She's really still the captain, but he's going to be the face of it.
Yeah.
We go back to the bridge, and there is a message from Phlox now. There is a Type 4 attack, so he's let them know they've changed the plan.
Yeah, he says that something terrible has happened, right? Mm-hmm. The Type 4 assault. And what that entails is the phaser frequencies will be rotated every however many seconds, which now is a huge issue because he was supposed to send us the what we needed to disable their phasers.
And so, he's not going to be able to help us. Mm-hmm. By the way, why don't they just rotate the phaser frequencies
all the time?
Attack?
Exactly.
Like,
hello.
If it's better,
it should always be Type 4.
Why not do that? Yeah.
Exactly.
But Chakotay immediately says, "Okay, evasive maneuvers." But the battle begins. The shot is the first shot is taken, and the doc starts to panic.
Yeah.
We cut to the hierarchy ship. Basically, they demand surrender. They're like, "We've got you. Surrender. We got multiple ships here.
Yep.
You don't
and it wasn't a shot off the bow. Remember, originally
it was
supposed
shot.
To be it was a shot on the bow, so it wasn't off the bow. Yeah.
We go back to the bridge. Doc is super awkward now. He's talking a little too loud. I just thought this whole sequence was very funny.
Because Janeway's, because there's that part where he says, Janeway's, you can hear Janeway. And she says,
she's giving
she's
the
tell
instructions.
Him, yeah,
she, tell
the,
him
the, yeah, the over the captain of the hierarchy ship says, "Your ship has supplies and technology that we require." Janeway says, "Tell them we'll defend ourselves. They won't get what they're after." And then the doctor says, "We'll defend ourselves. they won't get what they're after.
and really loudly and awkwardly.
The captain's like, huh? I mean, you won't get what you're after. So a lot of comedy here, you know. And then not in a million years, not if I have anything to say about it. And the Janeway's like, don't improvise, doctor. So she's trying to hold him back, put him in, you know, pull him back a little bit.
And also right in here, as he's awkwardly improvising and trying to pretend he's captain, Tuvok interrupts and he says, he basically interrupts the calm, the communication to the hierarchy ship, and he says, I found a potential weakness in their shields, but I'm going to need some time.
Yeah.
So the doc, you've got to keep him occupied. So then he starts talking to them. He's just, now he's improvising. And he's basically talking like he's at somebody's, you know, checkup exam. And he's like, you seem to be suffering from a physio-emotive order, disorder. He says, you may want to have a doctor look at that. It's just a really awkward captain.
Exchange. No captain would say that. Tuvok, he fires phasers. Kim says that's a direct hit. And the doctor reacts.
Says, how did you like that?
Taste of your own medicine. Janeway, tone it down, doctor. We get a hit too. Our phasers are offline. And the hierarchy ship says, prepare to be boarded. And Janeway says, it's time to negotiate, doctor. And before she can finish talking,
the doctor stands up.
Yeah.
And he says, activate the photonic cannon.
Tuvok, that was an order. And Tuvok plays along.
Everybody kind of looks around looks each other, like, what is he doing? Tuvok plays along, you know, activating the photonic cannon. Sure,
sir. And the doctor said, I'd rather not give the order to fire. And now the captain of the hierarchy ship says, well, my sensors are not showing an activation sequence. And the doctor says, well, of course not. The photonic cannon is impervious to sensors. And Phlox is like, the Borg couldn't detect it either. And that's why they were destroyed. So he's trying to add to this dialogue.
The story the doctor's making up.
Mm-hmm.
The boss considers this. The captain of the hierarchy ship considers this for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sends a message back to his people, and he says the hierarchy agrees, retreat.
Yeah.
And the ships take off and stop their attack.
Yeah.
So it worked. And now we go to sick bay, and the doctor is there, and Seven calls in to sick bay and says, hey, doc, we need you to come to the mess hall. And, you know, he's feeling embarrassed. He's just feeling, you know, shame, a lot of shame from what happened to him. And but he says, be right there. He goes into the mess hall, and there's everybody dressed up in their formal outfits. Big surprise. This is real life.
This is the real surprise.
Mm-hmm. And Harry says, no, doc, you're not dreaming. This is not a daydream. And you hand the medal to the captain, which I thought was interesting. I'm like, why is Harry holding the medal? And
I know.
Why didn't she just have it? But I guess it added a little bit of some formality or something.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
And Janeway says,
for your imaginative defense of this ship and her crew, I'm awarding you the Starfleet Medal of Commendation. Congratulations.
So he actually gets a medal for what he did. Yes. What he did. So woohoo!
And she pins it on him, this medal that we never see again.
Yes.
She pins it on him, and she tells him that she's going to authorize his research project. And then Seven steps up and gives him a kiss on the cheek. And she says, doctor, that was a platonic gesture. Don't expect me to pose for you again. And I found that it's a funny moment,
but
Seven made a weird loop around the doctor as she did this. And I was just like, why is she walking in circles
in a figure eight?
In a figure eight. But it was cute. It allowed it was, to play without a cut. It was just no reason for her to do it.
There is no reason, but it didn't pull me out. It didn't make me go like, what? No? Like, I wasn't upset with it, you know?
Okay.
No, but again, it is a weird blocking choice.
It was an odd little blocking choice, but it was cute and stayed on the dock there.
Yeah.
And that's how we go out on the doctor, getting his medal.
Mm-hmm.
Very good episode.
What's your lesson? What do you get from this episode?
I think for me, it was really about the doctor's experience of learning that there is value in daydreams or imagination or fantasy. There can be healthy fantasy, and it can be a powerful way to discover new potential in life, new things. Yeah, that was it. Healthy imagination. It's about having a healthy imagination.
I like
that. What about you?
My overall takeaway, if I'm looking at the big, big picture, is everything in moderation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and when his algorithms went crazy and started malfunctioning, that was excessive daydream. Yeah.
Getting lost in fantasy is not good, but no. there is a
sweet spot.
Use and a purpose for our minds having the capacity to imagine things that may not be real yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like Star Trek is an imaginary world in the future, but there's a lot of value in that. So
a lot of things that have been invented have happened because someone dreamed it. What's your rating of this episode?
I love this episode. Like I said at the start, I thought the script is one of the best scripts I think we ever had. Bob's great in it. The direction was great.
Everyone
was involved. Mm-hmm. I give it a 9.2.
Okay.
9.2. What about you?
I'm going to one up you by 0.1. I'm going to give it 9.3.
9.2, 9.3.
Yeah.
Our Admiral and Captain average rating for Tinker Tenor, Dr. Spy is 8.8.
Ah, okay.
I think we were enjoying our fellow actors a little more maybe than the regular audience, but it was really good.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of the Delta Flyers, where we got a chance to review a very, very funny episode of Voyager. And join us next week when Robbie and I will be discussing, recapping the episode Alice.
Oh,
yeah. Look at that. Not a lot of episodes with the person's name, right?
No, definitely not. Okay. All right. That's exciting.
See you next week.